Welcome to the Government Technology Insider Podcast. I'm Peter Jacobs. On this episode, we're looking at public safety communications during an emergency or natural disaster and what can be done to keep responders connected. To explore the issues, I'm joined by Kale Teeter-Gregg of mesh network provider GoTenna, Rashid Neighbors of satellite operator SES Government Solutions, and John Harris of Verizon. Denial and denigration of terrestrial networks due to damage or environmental conditions can leave emergency responders out of touch and potentially in grave danger. John, how resilient are these terrestrial networks, and how capable are they in emergency situations?
Yeah, it's a good question. And obviously, in an emergency situation, communications are absolutely critical. And I think in many cases, the terrestrial networks do perform admirably, and they solve many of the needs that we have for our first responders. One of the things, though, that I do see more often now is we've had some very, very intense hurricanes or unbelievable fires, as an example, in California. A lot of times the terrestrial assets are damaged by the ferocity of these events. And so the first responders inevitably become far more mobile in their need to stay communicative and stay ahead of the situation. And so it really becomes a combination of terrestrial network, terrestrial assets, in addition to the mobile assets that these folks need to stay ahead of these situations and provide first responder services to our community. So I think it's a little bit of both. I think that, again, the terrestrial networks certainly perform very, very well when they are available, but fire or other event can certainly take its toll on some of these bits of infrastructure. The other thing that's always an interesting impact to the terrestrial networks as well is some of the efforts to clean up the disaster. So we may have examples of where a fiber cable gets cut as we're trying to move trees or remove debris, and that can create challenges as well. So sometimes it's the event itself, and sometimes it's the impact of the event as we're trying to clean it up that can cause some challenges for our first responders.
John, responders are using a combination of networks, aren't they? The cellular network, of course, but also radio systems and point-to-point data links. So there's always some kind of combination going on. How does that impact what they do in these kinds of situations where suddenly the cell towers are gone because they burned down or an earthquake or high wind took them out?
As technology has evolved, it's meant nothing but more options and more choices for our first responders. And again, as you know, we've stated, they need that critical link, that critical communication in these life and death scenarios that they may be responding to. So as I've certainly been part of this industry, what I've been very appreciative of is the ability for us to start to really bring these different communication mechanisms together. Thinking about a network of LMR radios and how it can integrate with cellular communications. And in the absence of cellular, they can talk still to each other. But when the cellular communication is available, they can obviously talk to a much larger group. Again, thinking about a forest fire as an example, even if you don't have a broad cellular communication network available to you, to be able to talk to a fellow firefighter who may be a half a mile or a mile away can be the difference in how we would respond or fight that particular fire. So I think all of these technologies are incredibly complementary of each other. The thing that I think we tend to focus on and what I would try to help have my team really working on is how do we make them all very simple and easy to use for the first responder. Their job is to help us all to protect the community, to respond to the disaster, not to have to be incredibly technically savvy in order to make those solutions work. I think the simpler and the easier we can make them, the more interoperable we can make all those types of services, I think the better off we will all be, and certainly our first responders can take advantage of many more ways to communicate in their time of need.
So if terrestrial networks go down during an emergency, how can satellite and mesh networks fill any communications void? Rashid?
Yeah, thanks for that question. So in the event that a terrestrial network goes down, obviously the satellite will act as the transport layer, and we would come in with a remote terminal solution. At SES, we're equipment agnostic, and we can bridge that gap that's put in place by the terrestrial network going down, and the remote terminal will be where the terrestrial network went down. Information will be moved up through our satellite and down to a teleport and backhaul the data, and the teleport will be in a location that wasn't affected by whatever type of disaster or incident took place.
Could you give us an example?
A first responder like FEMA could benefit from that. So they might drop in right away for that initial response, and we could set up a customized solution that might not even be a large amount of throughput, just enough for them to make calls and communicate and so forth. And then for the longer term response, where they might be helping people get their insurance information and all of that type, we can set up a longer, more permanent type solution that's able to support a lot more users.
Kale, your thoughts?
Mobile mesh networks allow for emergency management, public safety agencies, federal agencies, to create a completely ad hoc off-grid communication system without great expense and very limited deployment effort. What that really means is that when you lose infrastructure, when you lose your towers, a mobile network or an ad hoc network has the ability to tie in all your team members together and create that individual network without the infrastructure already in place. For instance, our devices, Pro with smartphones, that most agencies are already going to have, and we use some situational awareness tools like ATAC or GeoSuites that are provided by some outstanding third-party vendors and the government as well to help first responders maintain that critical function of situational awareness when they are deployed. Having been deployed overseas as well as here, it's always amazing to see when you show up in Florida or you show up on the Gulf Coast in Texas, how difficult it is to work in the dark. And what mesh networks allow you to do is use these different situational awareness tools and then basic communications to tie that together to allow your teams to be able to operate in a knowledgeable way and provide that situational awareness all the way back up to the command structure as they're making decisions on where to deploy personnel during large events.
Rashid, it's been said that satellite as a solution is too expensive and requires too much hardware and ground infrastructure to be rolled out in the way that you described during an emergency or natural disaster. But is that really the case?
When you compare satellite pricing to terrestrial, generally, yes, satellite will be more expensive, but you're deploying satellite in a situation where terrestrial is not possible, right? So there's a lot of different tiers and pricing when it comes to satellite, but we don't directly compete with terrestrial. Now, that being said, the ground infrastructure portion of satellite, especially with the remote antennas that I discussed earlier, there is such a wide variety of antennas that can be selected and tailored to your end user. So it can be something that's geared towards someone who's actually a SATCOM expert to someone who has no clue of how to actually operate. And it's very easy. And there's a wide variety of pricing. So at SES, we have a GEO fleet of satellites as well as a MEO, medium Earth orbit. So GEO technology has just been around for quite a long time. And there is a wide plethora of antenna technology out there that can operate it. Our MEO fleet, O3B, is more of a next generation type technology, medium Earth orbit, a lot more throughput. The antenna suites we have out there for that, there aren't as wide a variety there, and they are a little more difficult to operate, but that is where I think we put out a good solution where we have variety with the GEO and MEO, and we can offer the proper solution for the particular situation.
Kale, mobile mesh networks, when not connected to a terrestrial network, can only deliver some communications and situational awareness capabilities. So how do you see this technology fitting in with other technologies in an emergency situation?
Just like when we're talking about with the satellite for backhaul, there are multiple ways that mesh networks can backhaul back into a system, whether you're talking about through Wi-Fi or satellites. There are ways to do that. Mobile mesh networking systems can extend the edge of that connectivity for your teams that are deployed, your responders that are out in the field, while still supporting backhaul of multiple types. Again, we're agnostic in how we backhaul back in. It can be through satellite, which is the most common practice that we'll utilize, but it can be through internet like we're using in Puerto Rico as we set up the backhaul there. We've used FirstNet for our primary backhaul and tying everything in. And what it does is that while you are correct, it doesn't give you all those bells and whistles, but it does provide you with real-time location updates of where all your team members are, and it creates a communications network that feeds all the way back into your command center and or dispatch, providing that last mile, so to speak, when there's not going to be any connectivity for the individual first responder.
So mesh is really a complementary technology to terrestrial and satellite.
Absolutely it is. Absolutely it is. We again, love teaming with different satellite partners that we utilize. And in deployments in Afghanistan and Africa, we found that we can backhaul that information all the way back into command centers in the United States. And using that same technology, we've begun to do that during incidents like the wildfires out in California or some hurricanes that we've recently responded to, using satellite as our backhaul. And then we provided that system on the ground, or that solution on the ground, for all the first responders.
Rashid, would you agree that satellite, mesh, terrestrial, they all complement each other, especially in an emergency situation?
Oh, definitely. For sure. I think they complement each other. And that kind of piggybacks on my point I was making earlier, that the pricing difference isn't much of an issue because we don't really compete with each other. You know, there's some overlap, but a lot of terrestrial providers have backup coop plans in place, and those backups are satellite. So terrestrial and satellite, we're very familiar with each other.
John, how do you see these technologies fitting together?
I think that all of these, again, are necessary in certain components of when we are responding to a situation. You know, at Verizon, we have a tremendous fleet of mobile assets, as an example, that we will send out and respond to events as necessary. And in the moment right after a large hurricane, a large storm, a tornado, we may need to leverage a satellite backlink or backhaul for a mobile command trailer or a mobile asset in the field in order to restore communications. The only real challenge with the satellite is that there's not as much bandwidth as you would get from a traditional connection. It may be a little bit of a limited type service, but it's critical in that moment that we have it. We would also leverage a microwave type connection from nearby existing infrastructure to support, again, whether it's a mobile site or to restore backhaul to a fixed piece of infrastructure. So bringing all of these different mechanisms and types of communication services or technology services available to support either a mobile type of a response or a fixed asset is incredibly important for our first responders, and then to be able to ultimately mobilize them and get them out into the field and serving the community is really the end goal.
You're listening to the Government Technology Insider Podcast. I'm Peter Jacobs, joined by Kale Teeter-Gregg of GoTenna, Rashid Neighbors of SES Government Solutions, and John Harris of Verizon. We've been talking about communications during an emergency, but what's different about communication needs after a disaster, when the immediate danger is past? Kale?
After an emergency or an immediate disaster has begun, what we find is that when central communications is down, transportation, energy infrastructure, hospital operators, and the like, they still are operating in the same dangerous environment without communications. In fact, I would argue that post-disasters are still just as dangerous immediately after an event. For search and rescue teams, having the ability to, again, have that off-grid situational awareness makes their work safer and more efficient. Having been part of Texas Task Force One, which is a USAR team on deployments, we've been out in areas where we're searching rubble piles and we don't have any way to connect back, or as a large group to connect back to command. And they're kind of waiting 6 to 8 hours for us to let them know what's going on, what we've uncovered, and how the search is going. With some of these new technologies like satellite, like mesh, it's changed that paradigm so that now we're real time with our command structure and they're able to support us a lot better with the equipment and personnel that may be needed during and immediately following a large event.
John, what's your perspective?
Yeah, I think after the disaster is certainly a different but equally as urgent sort of an activity, right? There's still a lot of activity and a lot of things happening in and around the area. During the disaster, we tend to focus a lot of our efforts on providing the services directly to the first responders themselves. How can we get them into the field? How can we keep them connected with their peers or give them situational awareness to what's happening in the moment? And I think after the disaster, we spend probably a little bit more of our attention on all of the folks now, the community itself that has been displaced or that is now in desperate need to make sure that family and friends and relatives know where they are, what they're doing, how are they? Are they okay? What can they do to support their friends and loved ones who may have been impacted by this storm? So focusing on things like charging stations and places where people can get broad levels of communication to get news out and get updates to friends and family is really, really critical. And then obviously, as was mentioned earlier, you know, the folks that are cleaning up the disaster, they really need to be able to stay in tune with what's happening. And those communications are really, really critical as they open roads or find where there are still blocked areas or points that need to be taken care of. So I think we tend to focus on the first responders and the sort of pinpoint needs for communication during the disaster. And then afterwards, it becomes a much broader exercise on how do we include everyone in that communications recovery to be able to get information in and out of the scene and provide support and help for those who, again, maybe have been impacted or displaced by the emergency.
Right. We talk a lot about the first responders, but there's also the secondary response organizations, the community services, maybe houses of worship or relief organizations that also need to stay connected while you're also trying to restore service, normal service, to the victims of the disaster. How do you manage all of that, and how does all of that interact?
Yeah, it's such a great point. And I think, you know, we so often, unless you've been in one of these events or disasters or have seen it firsthand, it's really difficult to describe the impact socially, emotionally on the folks that have lived through it. I tend to think about it this way, is that our phone itself anymore in today's society is no longer just a phone. It's not just a nice to have. It's truly the most important device that you carry with you on a daily basis. If you forget your cell phone, you're probably going to turn around and go back and get it. And so for these folks that have been impacted by, you know, one of these large events and have lost so much, the more we can do to bring them back to just normalcy is so critical, and it's such a relief for them. So to see someone be able to make a phone call and let loved ones know they are okay, or provide updates or get information or check the news and see what's happening around them or find where they can get help, where is the nearest shelter or relief facility they can go to, it really, really is amazing. And so I think our effort, our intention is always going to be to make sure that we give the broader community that sense of normalcy, that support, that little bit of regular life, if you will, and get them back to it as quickly as possible is absolutely critical. And it really, really means the world to them when you can see it happen. So a charging station, a phone they can use, an internet connection that they can take advantage of in a moment like this is really, really priceless.
If there's one thing that emergency response organizations or state and local governments should be doing right now to better prepare for emergencies, what would it be? Rashid?
Thanks for that question. I think it's a great one. So obviously, I'll talk about that from the perspective of a satellite owner-operator. I think what they should do is reach out and establish those relationships with us in advance. And ideally, try to work out some type of pricing or contractual arrangement in advance if possible, but at least establish a relationship, because oftentimes what happens is you might get a call, you know, as the disaster or emergency has happened and you're scrambling, and they might not even know their options, because most folks, it's not their job to be the satellite expert, which is fine. We'd rather be able to proactively give you the options, let you know what's in the realm of the possible, and then you can make those choices ahead of time, or at least be informed when an incident takes place.
Gail, what do you recommend?
Yeah, so as a previous emergency manager at the state level and federal, I can tell you that what Rashid said is dead on. We need to first ensure that we reach out in advance before these events. Revisit your emergency communication strategies to ensure redundancy and resiliency at every point of failure. Every storm season, we see it again and again, that communications infrastructure is absolutely invaluable, but it is never invincible. Every major event that we have, we can always point to communications failures as our number one after action item that needs to be addressed. Given the budget, it's always paramount for agencies to work within that and come up with solutions and new emerging technologies that will best fit an overall or a global solution for that agency. Again, it's all about how to maximize your communications reach and preparing for it in advance.
John, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think what I would say is reach out and really do everything you can to understand the resources and the tools that are available to you. I think so often what I've seen is that so many of the first responder agencies, as I've been working with either state and local first responders or now at the federal level, is they're very busy with their day jobs, and so they're not always aware of what technology advancements are available to them, what tools are in the tool chest, so to speak, for them to be able to take out into an emergency situation. And so being educated, being aware, you know, knowing what is available for them, I think is half the battle. So we try to really, really make ourselves available as partners, as technology advisors. And I would just encourage as many first responder organizations as possible, take the opportunity to have a technology overview, walk through the roadmap, understand the partner ecosystem that is available, and some of the things that can be done to augment your communications network, in particularly during a disaster situation. How can we help you with power? How do we help you with charging devices, connecting individuals who may have been isolated? It's not always just about, you know, your traditional dial tones and cell phones anymore. There are so many different ways that we can help first responders connect. I think ultimately my thought would just be to reach out, talk to your partners, talk to them about technology advancements, talk about the roadmap and what this partner ecosystem really looks like, because I think they'll find that there are a lot of things that they may not have been aware of that they can really take advantage of when the moment's right.
This has been the Government Technology Insider Podcast. I've been talking with Cale Teeter-Gregg of GoTenna, Rashid Neighbors of SES Government Solutions, and John Harris of Verizon. I'm Peter Jacobs. Thanks for listening. Please join us again.